All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Krishna's effulgence. Hare Krishna. He has an effulgence, you know that, right? He does. Okay, we are reading today, we're finishing the purport. Yesterday the purport wasn't complete because it's a long purport to text 19. We're on Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 19, which is describing the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, Emperor Parikshit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati yutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan. Unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we'll just review this verse. Is that it? Yeah, okay, thanks. I couldn't recognize it, but that's correct. We'll do the Sanskrit too because we have plenty of time. Ha 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 ha. Okay. Brahmana Brahmana Uchu. Partha Praja Vita Shakshat.
Partha Praja Vita
Shakshat. Ikshvakur Eva Manava. Ikshvakur Eva Manava. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha. Ramo Dasaratir Yata. Ramo Dasaratir Yata. Brahmana Uchu. Partha Praja Vita Sakshan. Ikshvakur Eva Manava. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha. Ramo Dasaratir Yata. Please chant. Partha Prajavita Sakshat. Ikshvakur Eva Manava. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha. Ramo Dasaratir Yata. Eva Manava. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha. Ramo Dasaratir Yata. Partha Saksha.
Ishvakur Eva Manava.
Brahma, Amadasavatir Yata. Brahmana, the good Brahmins, Uchu, said, Partha, Osanaprita, Kunti, Praja, those who are born, Avita, maintainer, Sakshat, directly, Ikshvaku Eva, exactly like King Ikshvaku. Manava, son of Manu. Brahmanya, followers and respectful of to the Brahmins. Satyasandha, truthful by promise. Cha, also. Rama, the personality of Godhead Ram. Dasarati, the son of Maharaj Dasarat. Yata, like him. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. The learned Brahmin said, O son of Prita. Interesting, because now this is referring to, here in this verse, in this context, it's referring to Yudhisthira. But when you have it in Bhagavad Gita, O son of Prita, it refers to Arjuna because they have the same mother. I thought I'd mention that. Okay, O son of Prita, this child shall be exactly like King Ikshvaku, the son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born. And as for following the Brahminical principles, especially in being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Ram, the personality of Godhead, the son of Maharaj Dasara. So, Hridayananda Maharaj read a lot of the purport, and there's still a few other points in the purport that we'll cover. Omaginati mirandasya jinanjana silakaya chakshur unmilitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master very kindly forced to open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. And because of that, I'm totally indebted to him. and beg for service life after life. So who can remember some of the points that Maharaj made yesterday in his class? And then we'll go on to the other points. What was one of the major things that he established? He established the storyline, you know, and how, why Maharaj Yudhisthira was so concerned about having a good son, you know, a good progeny. It was his grandson, but, you know, having an heir to the throne, and why it was so important in order to keep the Kuru dynasty in its preeminent position, you know, to rule the world properly, not just rule the world, but rule the world properly according to the principles laid down for a noble king. Kings are noble kings or saintly kings. They're called Raja. They're the king, but Rishi, they're also saintly because they're schooled in the principles of how to protect all the citizens. And that was another major point in the purport that Maharaj spoke about, you know, about how all the living entities that take birth in the kingdom, not just the human beings, but they're also meant the trees, the cows, everyone, every living entity that takes birth at that time in that area, they're also praja, they're also citizens, they're also to be praja, protected by the king. And that protection means protection so that they're understanding what the value of their existence is. Not the value of existence isn't just to eat, sleep, and be merry, but the value of existence, especially in the human form of life, is where that the key to leave this cycle of repeated birth and death is facilitated by developed consciousness. So the king's duty was to guide the citizens because of so that they would make the best use of their human form of life and make progress towards transcendence. So who can anybody remind, does anybody remember the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that confirms the duty of the saintly kings or the important people, great people? What's their duty? Probably wasn't a good enough hint, but you know, what great men do, common men follow. So that's the scriptural injunctions. What the great man does, the common men follow. And we see that, you know, today in society. But unfortunately, who they're considering great is not at all according to the scriptural standard of greatness. Okay, so there was other points that Maharaj made another point about how it was so, Yudhisthira was in an anxiety to understand if this baby, if this new heir to the throne was going to be a qualified saintly personality. He was in anxiety about that because even though, you know, according to the standard laws of karma, you could say, if the parents are good and have a good consciousness at the time of conception, then the progeny that they produce will also be good like that. That's the normal circumstances. But there's many exceptional circumstances that good parents bring, you know, there's whatever, a child that's not up to that standard of goodness. In fact, oftentimes they have demoniac tendencies. So he was in anxiety about that. So he's asking these learned Brahmins who are expert in Jyoti Shastra or in the astrological calculations to do the birth chart of Maharaj Parikshit to see what his qualities are going to be like. So here in this verse we got a few, I think it's the very first verse that starts. Yeah, the previous verse just gave a general description of how, they just were giving a general description of Maharaj Parikshit would have good qualities. And here starts a series of verses where they're actually comparing him to previous great saintly personalities. So the purport was quite long. Maharaj read to a certain point. I'm going to just repeat the part about Manu and go on about the part of Lord Ram. So this is in the part of Manu. Manu, mentioned in this verse, is the father of Ikshvaku and is the seventh Manu of the name Vivasvata Manu, the son of the sun god Vivasvan, to whom the Lord instructed the teachings of Bhagavad Gita prior to his teaching them to Arjuna. Mankind is the descendant of Manu. Just to mention, so this is referring to the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna is explaining the parampara section, of the cyclic succession, how this great science was originally spoken to Vivasvan. Vivasvan instructed to Manu, Manu instructed it to Ikshvaku, and this transcendental knowledge was established, but in due course of time, the succession was broken. So it's very interesting, since we've just been studying the third and fourth chapter in Bhagavad Gita and our Bhagavad Gita classes, how the connection between the third chapter in the Gita and the fourth chapter. So think about the Gita. In the third chapter, Karma Yoga, Krishna is just establishing all these sacrificial performances that one should do, sacrifices to Vishnu. In the beginning of creation, the Lord sent forth generations of men and demigods and said, be thou happy by this sacrifice because it will bring all good fortune to you. More or less, that's a summary of that verse. It'll bring all good fortune to you. So he's presenting, in the Gita, he's presenting like the instruction manual. When you get a complicated machine, an electronic machine, you obviously get, this instruction manual that's 47 pages long, and it just tells you how to work the whole thing. And so the creation, the material world, Krishna is also giving us our direction manual through the Gita, through the and telling people in general that, the demigods are providing the necessities of life through his arrangement. That's the administrative arrangement of the Lord. The Lord's empowering the demigods. The demigods are empowered in charge of various necessities of life, like air, water, rain, etc., etc. And if one makes sacrifices to the demigods and pleases the demigods, then all of those necessities of life are provided in abundance. But if one doesn't do that, or if one just takes exploits the material resources for their own sensual pleasure, then there'll always be difficulty, as we can see personified in this age of scarcity. That's a new one, age of scarcity and quarrel. So he's giving all of that instruction in the third chapter, and then in the fourth chapter he just starts talking about this science was taught to Vivasvan. So the connection is that it's the duty of the kings, it's the duty of the people in charge to present that information on how to live peacefully. That's how it's propagated. That's how it's maintained, and that's how it flourishes, because the people in charge are understanding the connection of sacrifice to life and the importance of following that. So just a little tidbit there. So that was in reference to, now we're talking about Ikshvaku and the parampara and et cetera, but we have to remember that these things are all referring to the character of Maharaj Prakrit. That he'll be like these people, that he understands the purpose of life. He understands, he's been trained from childhood to take up this responsibility, and he's qualified to accept it and administer it. Whereas in modern state of affairs, even in the democratic system, anybody can run for president of the United States as long as they have enough money or get support or whatever, but anybody can run, whether they've been in politics, or they have any clue or training in it, or they're just, some random personality that has no training at all. And that's who you get sometimes. And anyway, so it's a total different system. Maharaj Parikshit trained from birth on Kshatriya principles and protection, but not just that, but also trained in scripture. So therefore he knows how to administer properly, when to be aggressive, when to, you know, be diplomatic in so many different circumstances. Okay, Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, mankind is in man. This Vaivasvata Manu had 10 sons named Ikshvaku, Nabhaga, Drista, Saryati, Narshanta, Nabhaga, Dishta, Karusha, Prishradra, and Vasuman. Does anybody know any stories about any of them? Can you remember any stories about any of them from the ninth canto when they're described? The one story that I remember is about Prishradra. Prishradra, he had taken a vow of brahmachari, and his duty, even though he was the son of the king, his duty was to guard the cows at night. And so he would stay up and at night and guarding the cows. And one night there was an attack on the cows by a tiger in the night. But unfortunately that night was a cloudy night and the moon was covered by the clouds. So when the cow started to cry at being attacked by the tiger and all the other cows, you know, started jumping around, Prishradra, he heard it, ran over, and with his sword he cut off what he thought was the head of the tiger. But because it was dark in the night, he actually cut the head of the cow off. But he didn't know that in the nighttime. But because in this course of chopping the cow's head off, he cut the ear of the tiger was frightened and left. So in the nighttime, he thought he had protected the cow and saved the situation. In the morning, when the sun came up, he could see he killed the cow. So he went to his spiritual master and said, "What should I do now? I just killed the cow." And the spiritual master cursed him, said, "You're going to be taking birth as a Sudra because of this offense." So Srila Prabhupada says there that his spiritual master, I can't remember, do you remember who his spiritual master was? It was somebody that we've heard, but I can't remember. Anyway, he said it was influenced by the modes of material nature. And so when Prishradra heard the curse of his spiritual master, the family guru, he said, "I'm out of here." And he just went and practiced bhakti yoga. And by practicing bhakti, he was liberated in his at the end of his life. Anyway, so all of these stories of the dynasties are further delineated in the ninth canto. And the ninth canto is a little hard, you know, every canto has its own little flavor. The ninth canto has a flavor that's a little hard to read. And this one had five sons, and he married this one, and that one married that one, and that one married that one, and then there's another king, and he did this, and he did that, and he did that, and you think, why do I have to hear all of these names? But the thing is that we need to hear all of these names for one of the reasons is to realize how temporary. Even they had long lifetimes and great achievements. Now, it's a thing in the past. It's just, you know, just in one sense, it's a series of names only. Just like in Prabhupada's Vrindavan Bhajan. Here I'm sitting alone in Vrindavan. Where are my friends? Where is my loving father? Where are my parents? Where are all my relatives? He said, they're a list of names only. And it gives one another like jab in the consciousness. This life is so temporary. I'm thinking it's the all in all. I'm thinking this is my house, this is my home, this is my family, and it's my house is really solid and built out of bricks, and it's not going to crumble in a hurricane or a tornado or whatever. You're thinking that's really well established, and it's just a list of names only. And if it doesn't crumble in a hurricane or a tornado, it'll just crumble by the course of by the influence of time. It's amazing, isn't it? Even when you get into a new house or a new mobile home, depending, you know, it takes just in a few years, you know, this comes off and that comes off. And just we got into this body, we were really happy. We were really happy, it worked really well. And now, the knees aren't bending like they used to, are they? And the eyesight isn't the same. and the hearing is, you know, and the teeth are, anyway. So many things, it's the nature of time. So this is one of the benefit. This is one of the reasons that we have that ninth canto, the list of the dynasties, to actually see how life is so fleeting that we need to take advantage of it. Okay, the Lord's incarnation, Matsya, the gigantic fish, was advented during the beginning of Vivasvata Manu's reign. He learned the principles of Bhagavad Gita from his father, Vivasvan, the sun god, and he re-instructed the same to his son, Maharaj Ikshvaku. In the beginning of Treta Yuga, the sun god instructed devotional service to Manu, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku for the welfare of the whole society. Again, all of this is in relation to what and how and what the characteristics that Maharaj Parikshit is going to exhibit during his life. That he's going to be an educated in Shastra, he's educated in Shastra, he'll be a competent ruler, and he'll be a pious ruler. So therefore, he's reassuring Maharaj Yudhisthira, you don't have to worry, you have a competent heir to the throne here. So now the description is about Lord Ram. So Lord Ram, because also Maharaj Parikshit is compared to Lord Ram in his vow of truthfulness. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated himself as Sri Ram, accepting the sonhood of his pure devotee, Maharaj Dasarath, the king of Ayodhya. Lord Ram descended along with his plenary portions, all of them, and all of them appeared as his younger brothers. In the month of Chaitra, on the ninth day of the growing moon in the Treta Yuga, the Lord appeared, as usual, to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the disturbing elements. When he was just a young boy, he helped the great sage Vishvamrita by killing Subahu and striking Maricha, the she-demon, who was disturbing the sages in their daily discharge of duties. The Brahmins and Kshatriyas are meant to cooperate for the welfare of the mass of people. The Brahmin sages endeavor to enlighten the people by perfect knowledge, and the Kshatriyas are meant for their protection. So this is an important point also, that the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, they work together. So the Kshatriya in this age, he was established as the ruler, the supreme ruler, but he wasn't an independent ruler. That's a very important point. It wasn't that he was a dictator, just by his own whims he did it. But the Brahmin, the Kshatriya, the trained Kshatriya, always consulted the Brahminical class for scriptural advice on how to deal with certain situations. And therefore, they had the best cabinet members, you could say, the best advisors, because the Brahmins didn't have material motives in advising the king in any certain way for their own personal benefit. They didn't, it wasn't like that. Okay, Lord Ramachandra is the ideal king for maintaining and protecting the highest culture of humanity known as Brahmanya Dharma. So again, we're speaking about Lord Ramachandra in reference to Maharaj Parikshit, because Maharaj Parikshit will have similar qualities. So we could even say, Maharaj Parikshit will be an ideal king for maintaining and protecting the highest culture of humanity, because that's how his life worked out. He was, and the stories will continue, after the birth of Empire, after this chapter on Maharaj Parikshit's birth, we'll have some of his activities when he meets the personification of Dharma, the bull and the cow, and how he deals with that situation, etc. Okay, the Lord is specifically, oh look here, the Lord is specifically the protector of the cows and the Brahmins, and hence he enhances the prosperity of the world. He rewarded the administrative demigods by effective weapons to conquer the demons through the agency of Vishvamrita. He was present in the bow sacrifice of King Janak, and by breaking the invincible bow of Shiva, he married Sita Devi, the daughter of Maharaj Janak. After his marriage, he accepted exile in the forest for 14 years by the order of his father, Maharaj Dasara. To help the administration of the demigods, he killed 14,000 demons. And by the intrigues of the demons, his wife, Sita Devi, was kidnapped by Ravana. He made friendship with Sugriva, who was helped by the Lord to kill Vali, the brother of Sugriva. By the help of Lord Ram, Sugriva became the king of the Varanas, a race of gorillas. The Lord built a floating bridge of stones on the Indian Ocean and reached Lanka, the kingdom of Ravana, who kidnapped Sita. Later on, Ravana was killed by him, and Ravana's brother, Bibhishan, was established on the throne of Lanka. Vibhishan was one of the brothers of Ravana, a demon, but Lord Ram made him immortal by his blessings. On the expiry of 14 years after settling the affairs of Lanka, the Lord came back to his kingdom, Ayodhya, by flower plain. He instructed his brother Shatrughna to attack Lavanasura, who reigned in Mathura, and the demon was killed. He performed 10 Ashvamedha sacrifices, and later on he disappeared while taking a bath in the Sarayu River. So his birth was momentous, and even the way that he disappeared was also quite incredible. And same for Maharaj Parikit, similarly for Maharaj Parikit. His birth after Aswatthama threw that Brahmastra weapon that was meant just specifically to kill Maharaj Parikit, he was saved within the womb. Prabhupada says there that it's not surprising that Krishna appeared within the womb of Uttara, because he was still manifesting himself outside the womb of Uttara, but he could manifest himself inside the womb of Uttara. Why? Because he was already there. He just manifested himself. He wasn't there and he then appeared there. He's inside the womb, he's outside the womb, he's here, he's very near, he's very far away, he's within everything and he's outside of everything. That's one of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. So similarly, he had an amazing birth, Maharaj Parikit, and he had an amazing death departure, which you're all familiar with. Okay, so the great epic Ramayana is the history of Lord Ram's activities in the world, and the authoritative Ramayana was written by the great poet Valmiki. So there's one reference to this demon Lavanasura. I had to look him up a little bit because I've heard mention of him often, but I don't really know his history. So I looked him up in Sri Wikipedia Purana, and it said there that Lavanasura, and it's very interesting because exhibits the same anxiety that Maharaj Yudhisthira had. Maharaj Yudhisthira was concerned that even though Maharaj Parikit was conceived from noble parentage, there's still a chance, there's still a possibility that the child is not a qualified child. So in this Lavanasura, the case is similar. And Lavanasura's father was Madhu. And Madhu had reigned in, it became known as Mathura from his reign. So Madhu was a very pious, noble, righteous, religious king. And he has this Lavana as a son. And Lavana had similar characteristics to the son of Maharaj Anga. So remember who the son of Maharaj Anga is? Vena. And you remember some of the activities that Maharaj Vena, well, that little baby or little child Vena did when he was a boy?
He used to kill his friend while pulling.
Yeah, be difficult to be a friend of him and last for very long, right? So, see, he used to, Vena used to throw his friends, he used to throw his friends in the river and just watch them drown and think, hey, that was far up, you know? So Lavanasura was similar. He used to kill his friends and then he would eat them. And Madhu, his father, Maharaj Madhu, was so disturbed by that activity, those activities. And obviously it was probably more than once he did that. And that's a speculation, but anyway. Maharaj Madhu went to the ocean and drowned himself in shame. You know, he just, you know, he was so embarrassed that. Anyway, so Lavanasura, somehow or other, he got some benediction from Lord Shiva, and he got Lord Shiva's trident, or a trident like Lord Shiva's, and was very, very powerful and was just making a huge disturbance in the area. And so that's why Lord Ram originally instructed Bharat to go kill Lavanasura. But Shatrughna said, but Bharat's already pleased you with his service, so can I do something? And then they said, okay, you can do it. So Lord Ram let Shatrughna go, but he instructed him, try to challenge him when he's not holding the trident. That was a hint, how to conquer the demon. That was a hint. Try to challenge him while he's not holding that invincible trident, you know? And so Shatrughna went to his capital city, Mathura, and he waited outside the gate of Mathura. Because in the morning time, Lavanasura would go outside and go hunting for animals and whatever, living entities, for his daily food. And so he met him on his return from a hunting expedition and killed him. And therefore, cleanse the earth of the scourge of Lavanasura. So, but again, although these stories are of great sages and personalities and even incarnations of the Lord, they're in relation to the qualities that Maharaj Parikshit will be exhibiting as he grows in strength and in opulence and in good qualities under the reign of his pious and saintly grandfathers, all of the Pandavas, and will come to administer the world in a way that leads them on the path of righteousness. And that's why in the next few chapters, when he does meet the personification of Kali, who's beating the cow and the bull, and he says, go out of my kingdom, or you, when we sit, Kali asks for a place to stay. He says, well, you can just stay where, actually I forget now. But he says, you go out of my kingdom first, he says?
He said, there's nowhere I can go.
He said, there's nowhere I can go because there's no place that is transgressing religious principles in your kingdom. And so he said, okay, remember where he said he ultimately could go? To go where the gold is being hoarded, because wherever there's gold being hoarded, that's the currency for buying sense gratification in excess. You know, that's the currency, gold. That's the key to, you know, excess. So there's going to be a whole slew of verses comparing him to other famous personalities, but these are the personalities that have been mentioned so far. Any discussions or comments? And if not, or even if so, we just also have Chaitanya Charitamrita here, Ki Jai.
Yeah.
Just in case we need, someone needs a quick pickup of a case of Chaitanya Charitamrita's in order to celebrate Lord Chaitanya's appearance day, which is coming up very soon on Sunday. The whole case, all however many books there are.
Nine
books for $99 only. What a deal of transcendental knowledge. So if anyone would like to take this case, that's fine. Just hand over the money. Or anybody listening online who's been thinking that they were going to do it for a while now, and here's another good opportunity, a reminder that is there. We have the goal is 30 books, 30 sets. We're nearing that goal, and we could use a little more help on that. But anyway, any discussion or comments on Maharaj Parikshit's great characteristics? Jai. Have a wonderful day. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Ivacha, Patita Anam Pavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Namo Namaha. Happy Ekadasi. Hare Krishna.